Good morning, witches. This is the Witch Daily Show, coming to you from New Orleans, with host Tanya Brown. Our episodes span about 20 minutes long to give you just a little pop of magic. So, tune in, take a deep breath, and enjoy. Good morning. It is November 25th, 2022. It is Friday. I am Tanya, and this is the Witch Daily Show. Today's episode is brought to you by Fibermancers for Hire. So let's get your day going with a little magic. Our quote of the day is, "Gratitude is one of the strongest and most transformative states of being. It shifts your perspective from lack of abundance and allows you to focus on the good in your life, which in turn pulls more goodness into your reality." By Jen Sincero. What are we drinking today? Last day of Witches High. It is a caffeine-free tea that has that really decadent, like, I tend to prefer black tea. Black tea is my favorite type of tea. And I think for no other reason than it typically just feels really decadent and rich and deep. So I just tend to lean towards those. But this one really, like when I say it has that decadence factor, which is incredible for being caffeine free, like it's pretty cool. All right. So we're going to talk a little bit about rooibos and surprising things you may not know about it. So we talked about rooibos a little recently, but let's dig in a little further. This comes from sarooibos.co.za, and it's the Rooibos Council. Rooibos is one of South Africa's most valued national treasures. But besides being a healthy homegrown tea, how much do you really know about it? This Heritage Month, the SA Rooibos Council has embarked on a campaign to create greater public awareness of rooibos, where it comes from, what makes it so unique, and how to become a true connoisseur. So here are a few things you may not know. One, did you know that every spring, rooibos bush is covered in beautiful, tiny, yellow flowers, which after pollination forms a seed pod with a single seed inside? Have you ever seen a rooibos seed? These are tiny and are sown between February and March each year. It takes roughly 18 months before a bush can be harvested for the first time. Rooibos really only grows in Cedarburg region of Western Cape, although farmers have tried to grow it elsewhere in the world, but the climate, soil, and conditions just aren't conductive. And they said, we'd like to think nature intended it this way. The purity of rooibos is also tightly controlled. From the time the crop is harvested to when it is pasteurized, various tests are conducted to guarantee that every single cup, no matter which brand you drink, is 100% pure. Once the crop has been harvested, it is cut to lengths of between 1.5 millimeter and 5 millimeter. The cuttings are then bruised and moistened to 60%, after which fermentation takes place for 8 to 12 hours at temperatures between 34 Celsius and 38 Celsius. During this process, the characteristic aroma and red color develops. Rooibos is then spread thinly on concrete drying yards to dry. There are several different rooibos grades. The superior long cut is ideal for blending with pieces of fruit and flowers, while the extra fine cut lends to confectionaries and espressos. A supercut is mostly used in standard rooibos tea bags, which makes the tea softer in taste and helps release more active substances within the cup. So each cup of rooibos tea is packed with healthy flavonoids, including alspathin, which is a powerful antioxidant unique to the plants. Rooibos is also caffeine-free, low in tannins, and contains no fat or proteins, and is so you can enjoy up to 6 cups daily if you wanted to, because it has no caffeine. So yeah, in 2014, rooibos received a geographical indicator status, which means the tea can only be called rooibos if it comes from the defined area in Cedarburg and the surrounds. It's a proudly South African product, which is exported to more than 30 countries across the globe. This year, rooibos tea celebrates its 115th anniversary as a branded product. The first rooibos brand was launched by Benjamin Jensing from his general dealer shop in Clan William and is still sold there today. Super cool. I wish I could find a date on this. I couldn't find one because I was curious when this was written to see if it's still 115 years. All right. Moving into some headlines. This comes to us from cosmopolitan.com. 72 gifts that your witchy friend will absolutely use. I'm going to skip the ones I don't like. Let's see. Or if I think they're overpriced. I'm only going to tell you ones I think that are like cool. Oh, this is cute. It's like a tiny little palmistry statue, $13 off Amazon. I like the price. And I like items that like can be used for decor if like they just are happen to not be into palmistry. Let's see. Ooh, see, affordable, $14. Wishcraft Goods has cute little enamel witchy pins. Ooh, there's a perfume called Good Witch, and it is $8 on Etsy. It is by, let's, well, just Good Witch perfume. That's all you need to know. Oh, spell candles. I think that's always a good choice. Little spell candles. That is a good gift. Spell candles, it's a great gift. Let's see. Ooh, jewelry. I know Blessed Be Magic has really affordable witchy jewelry. They've been advertising with us. And it really is like cute, minimal, and affordable. Oh, okay. I like this idea. Little handcrafted spell jars off Etsy. You can get them for like $20 and they're really beautiful. I think that's a really nice gift. Pendulums are good gifts. Oh, you can make like a handmade starter kit. If you have a friend who is like maybe toying with the idea, you can make them a cute little starter kit. Maybe get a box and put in like kind of the go-to maybe candle colors and things like that. I think that's a great idea. Oh, a fortune-telling teacup. I love those. I think they're so beautiful. And again, that's one of those things, like even if they're not into tea reading, it makes either a decor item or they can just, use it, which I think is really nice. This article has 70 gifts. I'm being very picky. I'm being very picky for you because I want you to only get the best ideas. Let's see. Yeah, I think those are good options. And then, of course, to plug our own stuff, Sip a Spell right now is 30% off the entire website. Go check that out. Which way? Printed issues are $10 from $15. If you buy a printed subscription, you get a digital subscription for free. Just add both to your cart, it takes it off automatically. And for the rest of it, just use code Black Friday. Also, I also have launched a witchy New Orleans kind of experience. And I also have a witchy kind of retreat guest room that I've created. So if you want to visit New Orleans, just reach out. I know a lot of people want to visit, but the idea of going alone or can be scary, especially if you know, it's a city. So if you want to have someone who can like help you out and guide you, reach out to me. I think this is a really fun. Basically, my reasoning was I'm not married and I have no children. For like now, you know, like why can't I do fun things like should like give people these witchy experiences in the like one of the most magical cities, you know? So just reach out to me if you have questions about that. All right. So I'm going to throw this over to our moon correspondent. And after this break, we will talk more.
Hello to all of my astro friends. This is Serendipity, the Chicago astrologer, coming at you with your daily moon mantra for Friday, November 25th. The waxing crescent moon expounds on its philosophy in Sagittarius today. Here, the moon squares its ruler, Jupiter. Jupiter also rules the sign in which it currently resides, Pisces. And it has just recently turned direct in motion. So generally speaking, all systems are go for this connection. However, the square indicates that if you want to take advantage of Jupiter's ebullience, you'll just have to put in some effort. A Moon-Jupiter square can magnify your emotional state, so be careful about indulging your feelings. It's important to feel your feelings and let them flow through you. However, Jupiter can magnify them and sometimes make them overwhelming. Don't try to take them all on at once. Approach them one at a time, let them percolate, and then let them go. Your daily moon mantra is, sometimes questions are complicated, but answers are simple. This has been your daily moon mantra with Serendipity, the Chicago astrologer, signing off and reminding you that you are in charge of your own destiny.
Making my list for Halloweenmas. The most wonderful time of the year. Gifts for everybody. Fingerless gloves for Cousin Beatrix while she gardens so she doesn't get scratched and still looks fabulous. Check! Two octopus stuffies for the twins to replace the ones that went swimming. Check! Catnip stuffed tea bags for Lilith and Sparrow to replace the ones that were, hunted to death. Check! And where am I getting all these goodies? Vibromancers for hire, of course. Where else would a pixie shop? Spence and Val work magic with crochet hooks, knitting needles, and yarn to make all of my holiday dreams come true. Head on over to Fibromancers for Hire, that's the number 4, on Etsy or Facebook. For the month of November, get 10% off or free shipping with the code WITCHDAILY. They do custom orders too. I wonder if I have enough time for them to make that new shawl. Maybe that's my Halloweenmas gift for me.
All right, we are back. So, to finish off our series on the history of divination, I wanted to talk about a very popular one, which is the Ouija board. So, in February of 1891, the first advertisements began appearing in newspapers. Ouija, the wonderful talking board, which blew up a Pittsburgh toy and news store depicting a magical device that would answer questions about the past, present, future with magical accuracy. It promised solid entertainment and entertainment for all walks of life, a link between the known and the unknown, matter and immatter. Another ad in the New York newspaper claimed it was interesting and mysterious, as demonstrated to the patent office before it was clarified. The price? $1.50. Ouija historian Robert Murch has studied the history of the board since 1992 when he started researching. He said no one really knew anything about the origins, and it felt kind of strange. So for something so iconic and awe-inspiring, especially in American culture, how could like no one know where it was from? So he like did a lot of research. In fact, the Ouija board comes from the 19th century American obsession with spiritualism and the belief that the dead can communicate with the living. Animism, which had existed for many years in Europe, hit America heavily in 1848 when the sudden rise of the Fox Sisters in upstate New York. The Foxes claimed to receive messages from spirits knocking on the walls in response to questions. These girls became like super famous. You cannot, I've taken classes on like Ouija boards and spiritualism for like years. You cannot take a class without hearing about the Fox Sisters. They were just like, they were like the Kardashians of spiritualism. They were a hot, hot commodity. So the Fox Sisters claimed to receive messages from spirits knocking on the walls in response to questions. And we still kind of see this when we watch investigator shows. They'll be like, give us three knocks for yes or two knocks for no. So the Fox Sisters became famous, and spiritualism reached its peak in the second half of the 19th century. Spiritualism works for Americans. It is compatible with Christian dogma, which means that one can hold a meeting on a Saturday night and not mind going to church the next day after, like, talking with the spirits, you know? And that is something we see a lot. We see that with the Warrens. The Warrens were extremely religious, and they actually would only help people if they were a part of their religion, which I don't remember what their religion was. Like, Presbyterian, like, the Warrens' religion. It just says Christian, but I know they were, they were a very specific type of Christian. Okay, I don't remember off the top of my head, but they were very, very Christian, and they would only help people if they were like a part of their religion. At least that's what I've heard. Which makes sense, right? So like spiritualism, as we know it, right, like really worked with Christian dogma. Like it was really easy to go, oh, it's the dead or demons or whatever. So it felt acceptable. It felt sane. Like no one felt really strange contacting spirits in this way. And they would do so a few different ways. There would be table turning, which is typically what you see when you see movies on like seances, where it's like a round table and everyone's around it and they all have their hands on the table. And the idea is that if the table started to vibrate or rattle, it's because a ghost was there, you know? And they would also reach out to spirits by automatic writing, which was very popular. Now, you may wonder, why was it so popular at this time? Well, there was a lot of death, right? Women were dying in childbirth. Children were dying of illness. Men were dying in war. Mary Todd Lincoln conducted sessions at the White House after her 11-year-old son died in 1862. So during the Civil War, spiritualism gained even more of a following. People were desperate to connect with their loved ones who died in the war and never returned. So then animism developed in American culture. So kind of frustrated over the time it took to recognize a meaningful message from spirits, people were looking for ways to kind of speed up this process. So. Because, you know, they were like, okay, what does a knock mean? You know, like people were just getting really frustrated with like the ability to communicate through these like spiritually traditional processes. So in 1886, AP News reported that a new phenomena was occupying spiritual camps in Ohio. And that was the Ouija board. So we all know what a Ouija board looks like. And it just like really kind of blew up and became a thing. So remember, Ouija is a brand, okay? So these would also be called spirit boards. And the idea is that Ouija came from the French combination of yes and then ja in German for yes. According to Murch, based on his research, that may not have been like fully true, but it was Bond's sister-in-law, the creator, who provided the name, which is fascinating. So they say it was this man's sister-in-law who came up with the word Ouija. So, of course, you know, the Ouija board kind of takes off. It becomes really popular. These are really uncertain times. People are really clinging to these beliefs because they're desperate. Then, in the 1910s and 1920s, with the ravages of World War I and the flourishing years of the jazz age and Prohibition, there was a rise in popularity in the Ouija board. So spiritualism hit popularity in like the 1890s, and then the Ouija board really hit popularity in like the 20s, the 10s and 20s. So it was so ordinary to have a Ouija board at this point that in 1920, Norman Rockwell painted a man and woman on their knees on a Ouija board. And this was the cover of the Saturday Evening Post, which I'll see if I can find it and post it in the Facebook group. During the Great Depression, there was more and more demands for these boards. And within 5 months, a New York department store sold 50,000. Wow, that's like a lot. So in 1967, the year after the Parker brothers bought the game from the original company, they sold 2 million, surpassing Monopoly. Okay, now we're getting this is like another peak of death, right? So we have like World War I, we have the Civil War, so peak Civil War for spiritualism, right? Then World War I, boom, peak for Ouija boards. Now we're getting into like the Vietnam War, and peak, we're about to see it again. So the Ouija board really kind of exists in this space culturally when there's like a lot of death, right? Now, interesting, right? And like, so at like right now, Ouija boards aren't a scary thing. As we tend to know it now. I'm not a big fan of treating the Ouija board like it is this thing that's going to open up portals and roll, because it did not even have that reputation until the 70s. So this is like what I was talking about earlier in the week, that like when you really understand the history of stuff, like it takes a lot of the dogma out of it. So you may ask, when did the Ouija board become scary? I'm going to tell you, it was 1973. And you go, wow, how do we know? That was when The Exorcist came out and scared absolutely everyone with pea soup and spinning heads. So, of course, the movie claimed to be based on a true story. It implied that 12-year-old Reagan was possessed by the demon after playing with a Ouija board. So kind of think about it, right? Like at this point, they said that, you know, department store sold 50,000, Parker Brothers sold 2 million. So, like, there's a good chance in your grandma's attic with her copies of the Monopoly and I don't know what games existed back then. Monopoly and, like, cards. I don't know. Up there might have been a Ouija board, right? So all of a sudden, there's this scary movie that comes out, which is like going, oh my gosh, Ouija board's going to make a demon possess you and make your head spin and throw up pea soup. And then everyone goes up to like their family's attic and bam, finds one, right? Like that's very, that has a lot of oomph behind it, right? So just to make it like really clear how chill the Ouija board was until this movie, there is an episode of I Love Lucy that like was really weird about showing her pregnant, and like you had Ricky and Lucy in two separate beds. Like they were, it was very, very like PC, G rated. There is an episode and then in the 50s that has Ethel and Lucy playing with a Ouija board. So that just tells you how innocent they really were until The Exorcist. So I try really not to give in to the cultural hype of that the Ouija board is such a scary thing, because it genuinely wasn't until a movie came out, you know? It's like when we talk about Friday the 13th. It was just like this phenomena of media, just coming out all at the right time. So almost overnight, the Ouija board became a tool of the devil, and for that reason, a tool of horror writers and filmmakers. Also, what an easy way to start your scary movie, right? Like, as a writer, if I'm like, oh, I want to make a scary movie, but how do I get it going? Well, I'm tired and I'm lazy. Or as John Mulaney said, writers are lazy. I'm going to just put a Ouija board in it and I don't have to worry about actually making this movie like have any momentum. And that's essentially what happened. Ouija boards are a very easy way to like make a movie scary. And yeah, that's where we are. That's how we got here. In 2012, there were rumors that Universal was in talks to make a movie based off the game, although Hasbro declined to comment. But I mean, there's a million movies, so like whatever. So yeah. All right, witches. That is the end of our divination in history. I'm sorry if I fumbled a lot. I was reading notes that I haven't looked at in like a million years, so I do apologize. But I do want to give a shout out to listener Judith. Judith, you dreamlike celestial gnome. Alina Randazzo. Alina, you glorious graceful dragon. Elaine Gonzalez. Elaine, you glorious celestial barn owl. And finally, Nicole Lilly. Nicole, you poetic spiffy sun goddess. Thank you for so much being Patreon supporters. I really, really appreciate it. And, oh, we have a card. We have a card today. I always forget about the card, which is wild because we do it every day. Our card today is the... Awpuch. Is it Awpuch? I bet I'm saying that incorrectly. The Awpuch from the Deep, Dark, Dangerous Oracle. I bet it's Awpuch. You must understand your fears if you can. Stand strong against your fear. Fear is a natural and useful emotion as it protects you. What doesn't are fears that are not real. You must learn that not all fears are real. Some fears you carry are not your own. Confront them. Death is a part of life. All right, witches. That's all I've got for you today. Some quick housekeeping reminders. Our live Patreon show records this Sunday. So join. Have a nice time. Wait a minute. This Sunday, what does that mean? Sorry, this is me checking my calendar and being like, wait, what day is that? Yeah, okay, that looks good. So we will talk then. And yeah, okay. All right, bye.
Witches, we hope you have a wonderful day, full of joy and gentleness and confidence. Links for this week's episodes, our website, Patreon, along with a free daily card pull can be found at witchpod.com. One stop for everything we talk about. Now, take one more deep breath and have a great day.
I had an abortion when I was 15 years old in my home state of Arizona in 1994. It was not a decision that I made lightly, but I have never for one moment doubted that it was the right decision for me. But so much has changed in Arizona and many other states since then. If I were that same 15-year-old in Arizona today, legally, I would have to get parental consent. I would be forced to undergo a medically unnecessary ultrasound, go to a state-mandated in-person counseling session designed solely to shame me into changing my mind, and then take a state-mandated 24-hour time out to make sure I really know what I wanted. And finally, I would be forced to give the state a reason why. Well, here is mine. It is my body, not the state's. Women and their doctors are the ones that are in the best position to make informed decisions about what is best for them. No one else. No bill that criminalizes abortion will stop anyone from making this incredibly painful decision. These bans will not stop abortion from happening, but they will drive women and girls and people into the shadows, which is what this has always been about, shaming and controlling women's bodies. In the week after I shared my story on my show, women were coming up to me in the street, in the supermarket, at my gym, with tears in their eyes, thanking me for my bravery. But the word brave didn't sit right with me. Why is it brave to speak to an experience that millions of people around the world throughout history have gone through? And then I realized it is considered brave because as women, we have been taught to feel shame about our bodies since birth. I am so sad that we have to sit here in front of a row of politicians and give deeply personal statements because the why doesn't matter. It should not matter. I am a human being that deserves autonomy in this country that calls itself free, and choices that a human being makes about their own bodies should not be legislated by strangers who can't possibly know or understand each individual's circumstances or beliefs. I'm here today to help destigmatize a legitimate medical procedure and continue to encourage women not to allow themselves to be shamed for their choices. And finally, I am here today for my two little girls, Birdie and Cricket. My dream for them is that they will live in a world in which women are truly equal with complete control over their own reproductive health. That is the dream I hold for all people, regardless of their privilege or parents or what state they live in. That dream is slipping further and further from reality with every ban passed. I hope that you, our elected leaders, can help us reverse the tide. Thank you. I look forward to today's discussion.